Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. On our show today, we're going to talk a little about fertilization, especially fertilizing soybeans. If you've got any questions for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about on your farm, we'd love to take your phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag just about right away during the show here. Before we do, I'll just tell you a couple of my key points for fertilizing soybeans, then we'll talk about it throughout the show. But first of all, fertilizing soybeans doesn't always pay in that particular year. So, I mean, granted, now if you've got really low fertility, then it's probably always going to pay. But let's say you got medium to high fertility, and you say, you know what? Things look really tough for me this year. I'm just going to try to get by for a year. You can. Here's another important thing to know. I don't care what crop it is. The first half of the fertilizer you're going to apply is going to give you a greater return on investment than the second half. It almost always works out that way. So even if you just cut back a little bit just for a little while, you can sometimes get by with that with soybeans, in part because the yield can vary so much and we're really dependent on weather. Like for us, normally we're talking average 70, maybe even 75 bushel beans. We're not going to get that this year because we didn't have any rain basically after the 4th of July. I mean, well, a few sprinkles, but basically nothing. So in that time, we're probably 8 inches behind normal. And that really stinks. So for us in our region, August rains make beans. Well, we have all the fertility there. We did everything, multiple fungicides, insecticide. We did everything we could do. Weeds are, I mean, we're pretty much weed free, but didn't get the rain. So is that extra fertilizer we put on this year going to pay? Nope, it's not. Now, the good news is when you've got heavier soil, and or if you're talking about nutrients that basically don't move in soil, like phosphorus, zinc, and some of those, that fertilizer is going to be there for next year. So I will say this. Soybeans do respond very well to high fertility. Now, you got to be a little careful with diseases like sclerotinia white mold. You're probably going to have to use a fungicide if you have lots of fertility. But I'm just saying, fertilization's a key. On our farm, here's what we found. And actually, we work with a lot of seed growers around the country as well to help them maximize their returns on soybeans for the seed companies. And the biggest key is potassium. And I mean, it is hands down the number one nutrient for soybeans, potassium. You've got to have massive amounts. The average farmer in the United States, for example, puts on 10 or 20 pounds of potassium per acre for soybeans. That's it. And yet the crop removes, all depends on what your yield is, of course, but it's going to be 50, 80, 100 pounds. So the average grower on soybeans is falling way behind. And I just encourage you, take a look at the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. Look at your, if you're on a two-year rotation, let's say your corn and soybeans, just look at your corn yield, look at your soybean yield, and then add up the two potassium numbers. The average farmer, and this is no joke, we've got the stats to prove it, the average farmer in the United States is falling behind a potassium. And that's the number one reason why most people complain about their soybean yields, because they just flat out do not have enough K in the soil. Get that nutrient up, then you can start working on the other ones. But potassium is number one. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
Okay, this question comes from Montana. You guys are talking about fertilization for soybeans, but I'm curious about irrigation for soybeans.
Yep.
I've heard that you want to stress the plant early and then pour the water to them later.
Yep.
What would you say the timings are for watering soybeans?
Where is this at?
Montana, eastern Montana.
Okay, so not much different than ours. I made this comment just a few minutes ago. August rains in our region make beans. When that bean crop is going to need rain for you in Montana, in eastern Montana, is probably going to be just a little bit earlier than that. So I'd say the last 1 to 2 weeks in July through the first part of August, that's when the beans really need moisture. Now, as we say, stress the bean early, And part of the reason why I'm asking this question, where are you from? Eastern Montana is whole different than Illinois, for example. If it's Illinois, you're probably going to have enough natural rainfall, and the crop isn't going to be half dead if you don't irrigate it early. Well, for you in eastern Montana, you may have to be irrigating some early too. You got to keep that plant thriving all the way through. So, yeah, it needs some rain, some moisture early in the season. And then the bigger the bean, the more moisture it needs. And just keep kind of ramping that up as you get toward the end.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, is just thinking about your herbicide application. If you need some moisture to activate that, if you need some moisture to get the soybeans to all germinate evenly,
oh, sure.
Those
yes.
kind of things would be good. But that's yep. not a long-term thing. That might require an right. inch or something early just to get things going. But,
yes, for sure.
But, yeah, afterwards, we want to make sure we have plenty late. All right, got a question from Chad, and Chad is up in Saskatchewan. He said, I'm going to put lime on for the first time this fall. Lime applications are pretty rare in our area. My intent is to put lime out there, but I need to apply trifluralin this fall with a heavy harrow for weed control. Will I run into any issues with my trifluralin performance by when I'm putting all that calcium out there?
No.
I was also curious about, could I put on fall applied nitrogen too this same year where I put the lime?
Yes, you can do that. Just be careful, as always, with the nitrogen. Don't do it too early. Don't do it in an area that's going to flood out. And make sure if you're putting fall nitrogen on, you're going to definitely be planting the crop very early in the spring so you're not losing a bunch of N.
Okay, last one here before the break. Mark says, I've got a lot of Canada thistle in a field of grass hay. What is best to apply, Curtail or Milestone?
Hands down, Milestone. Curtail has stinger in it, but it also has 2,4-D that's going to prevent the stinger from getting down into the root system well because it'll burn the top growth off too early. So while Curtail is okay, Milestone is fantastic. Best thing we've ever seen on thistles. 7 ounces to the acre. It's great, and it's going to give you good residual even going into next year.
Thanks for the question, Mark. We appreciate that. We'll dive back into fertilizing soybeans right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to competitive herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Weedmaster, Patriot, and Diablo for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking about fertilizing soybeans, but don't let that stop you. If you've got an agronomic question, really on any topic, we'll be happy to help. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Start off in Michigan. We got John Leaf with us right now with AgriLiquid talking about fertilizing soybeans. John, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. How are you?
Oh, it's good. I have to chuckle because one of my very favorite people to talk about fertilizing soybeans with is Stephanie Zelenko. And I always tease Stephanie and I'm like, you know, Stephanie, I've done this, that, and the other in furrow on soybeans. And she just cringes. She gets nervous about that. Why are we so nervous about putting fertilizer too close to some of these things like soybeans?
Well, soybeans are a bit more sensitive to certain fertilizers, at least when applied in furrow. Some of the high salt index or high salt content fertilizers can burn the seed or cause germination issues with soybean seeds. Unlike corn, you know, corn's a lot more hardy when it comes to being around a lot more fertilizer in furrow.
So what do you see? How are farmers putting this on? Are they doing more two-by-two and trying to put it a little bit further away from the seed, or are they doing more over the top? What's been common?
Well, it's kind of all over the board, honestly. A lot of it depends on what kind of equipment the grower has and what he wants to accomplish. We do recommend fertilizer in furrow. Some of our phosphorus, potassium, micronutrient products can go in furrow at least up to a certain extent, certain gallon range. So like ProGerminator, SureK, Micro 500, for example. If we have 30-inch row spacing in soybeans, we can go up to 3 gallons without too much difficulty. Some folks do have 2x2 capacity on their planters, so they're able to do a lot of their PK and micronutrient applications through that as well. And then, of course, you know, we're also talking about foliar nutrition as the season goes on. So a lot of different options, a lot of different ways growers are going about fertilizing their soybeans.
All right, John, a lot of farmers that I've talked to across the country have said, you know, I put a bunch of fertilizer on my corn and there should be enough carryover for my beans. Have you found that to be a true statement?
I find that it's true that a lot of people do that, yes. I'm not sure that that's a true statement. If you stop to think about it, you know, corn, we're getting near record yields these days, of course, and that takes a lot of nutrition to create that kind of corn yield. And I'm afraid that people are drawing more nutrition out of the soil with their corn than what they think. And quite honestly, I think they're shorting their soybeans quite a little bit, especially when it comes to things like potassium and perhaps micronutrients as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the micros. How big a deal are the micros in soybeans this year with the drought conditions? On our farm, I would say where we had good levels of micros, we maybe tolerated that stress a little bit better than the areas that didn't. Would you say that's an accurate correlation there too?
Oh, I think so, yeah. So all of our nutrients work in concert in our soybean plant as well as our other crops. So, you know, they say potassium is the nutrient that helps with water management in the plant, but if you don't have appropriate levels of zinc or manganese or copper, iron, any of those, you can still run into problems with drought tolerance or a number of other stresses as well. So micronutrients are vitally important to maintaining that overall balance of crop nutrition.
Now, John, I know that AgriLiquid does a ton of research on soybean fertility. Where can growers go to find that data?
We have a website, agroliquid.com, and then within that, you take a look at research or resources, and then click on research, and you'll find our research reports. We have a wonderful search tool that you can type in the crop that you're looking for, the nutrients you're looking for, and you'll get a list of all the different reports that we have for a particular crop or a particular nutrient application type, whatever you're trying to search for.
Very good. We're talking with John Leaf with AgriLiquid. John, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right. Thank you.
Let's head down to Mississippi next. We've got Trent Irby with us right now with Mississippi State. Trent, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're talking about soybean fertility today, and I know soybeans aren't the only crop grown in Mississippi. How are fertilizing, or how are the fertilizing programs going there? Are guys fertilizing individually for soybeans? Are they fertilizing for multiple crops down there too?
Really multiple crops. I mean, we do have some acres here that would be what you, I guess you refer to as a continuous soybean situation, don't get rotated to other things, but we have a large number of acres that would be in a corn soybean rotation, and then some acres that would be you know, rice and soybean, and then some with cotton and soybean. So it's really all over the board as to what folks would be doing, but you know, they got to keep in mind that each of our crops here, at least in the last several years, have been on an upward trend of yield. So we are definitely removing more nutrients than what we have historically done, whether in a rotation system or in a continuous soybean system, either one.
That's good that crop yields are going up. We definitely need that to make some money and to feed the world too. What do you find you're running short in? What nutrients specifically are soybeans needing a little more of?
For us, potassium has been the big one, I guess, over the last 5, 6, 7 years. More recently, last year, and even more so the current crop cycle, sulfur has become something that we're keeping our eyes on. You know, a lot of research been done with potassium over the years, obviously, but sulfur is kind of not a new issue, I guess, but in the capacity that we're seeing, it still is going to require a little bit of work to figure it out, like how late in the season can we make some applications and try to correct some problems and things of that nature.
You know, I know the rainfall and weather patterns are a little different where you're at in Mississippi versus us up in the Dakotas. Talk to us about that. Is sulfur one that you have trouble leaching out, or why are you trying to time it specifically?
Well, so a large portion of our cultivable land here is in our Mississippi River Delta region, and you know, last year and the winter before that, we had quite an extensive flood across. There's probably 250,000 acres of soybean land that was flooded out and went unplanted in 2019. So that has been a region where we have definitely noticed some issues, I guess, and a large part of that's probably due to the weeks and even in some cases the months that those fields remained underwater with the flooding situation. But we have such a wide range of planting dates. We'll start planting soybeans around the 1st of April, and we'll have other fields that may not get planted until the first week of July, or even, you know, late June to mid-July, in that range. So we have, I guess, this huge planting window and lots of environmental conditions, as you can imagine, that go through that from, you know, I'm not going to use the word cold, considering where you guys are, but you know,
thank
for
you.
Us, cool and wet early to blazing heat, you know, and the crop just responds differently in those situations.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, with all the rotations that you've got. Are you seeing more growers reduce tillage, or what have been your tillage trends along with that?
Well, reduced tillage is probably the most accurate description. We do a lot of fall tillage and followed by stale seed bed planting in the springtime. So depending on the soil texture that we're dealing with, depends on whether we're going to make our nutrient applications, you know, post crop in the fall or try to wait till planting time in the spring to put it in. We do have some soils that leaching would be an issue and other soils where it's not as big of a concern.
Yeah, not easy, no doubt about that. We're talking with Trent Irby with Mississippi State. Trent, thank you so much. We appreciate having you on. We'll have to have you again sometime.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Talking about fertilizing soybeans on our show today, and it really has been making a difference for many growers. We're going to talk about some of the tips that we could get from some high-yielding growers coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's Bellum Herbicide.com.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the End Zone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio today. Thanks for joining us. Talking about fertilizing soybeans, and I know somebody who does a fantastic job at this. It's Matt Miles down in the state of Arkansas, 100-plus bushel yields multiple times. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, sir. How are y'all doing?
We're doing pretty well. Harvest is rolling around, rolling along up here. We're getting through that right now, and we're into some soybeans. And, you know, one of the things that I would say, I know this about your operation, as you guys run some pretty tremendous soybean yields, it takes a lot of fertility to keep that going with the beans pulling as much out as they are. Is this something, Matt, where it just keeps growing? You just keep building, keep learning every year?
Yeah. For sure. You know, we've got about a 6-inch topsoil, so pretty much most of the nutrients that we need, we've got to put out there, you know, in that year. And, you know, we use, and our favorite tool is y'all's fertilizer removal chart, the app that you have. And that's something I think that we've gotten, Rob's gotten me more paying attention to in the last 5 or 6 years. You know, when you're pulling off the higher yields, you'd be very surprised when you look at that chart how many pounds just, you know, say of potassium that you're pulling out. So it seems like, man, that's really expensive. I, that's a lot of money, but you're actually hauling that much off. And just to stabilize where you were the previous year, you've got to at least replace that much back.
Now, you mentioned potassium, and we were talking to Trent Irby over at Mississippi State, and he said the same thing. Potassium is just killing us. We got to get more. And then I talked with John Leaf up in Michigan, and he said potassium is getting us. And he also mentioned micros. Sounds like a common theme here. It takes lots of K to raise those soybeans.
It does. And the more you research a soybean and the more you pay attention, you know, to a soybean, the more you see what it actually takes to grow them. You know, in 2000, soybean was a stepchild here, and you know, we just threw them out there. And like you had said earlier in the program, we thought we had enough, you know, nutrients from our cotton, you know, left over to take care of them. But we've been seeing some really, really interesting things, you know, as we as we try to push for those higher yields. And soybeans respond to fertility well, not just from a yield standpoint, but you can take a field that's got some kind of problem like a root knot nematode, and you are a charcoal rot or something like that. If you've got a high fertility field versus a low fertility field, most of the time that high fertility field will overcome the biggest majority of that problem.
Yeah, you get a lot more forgiveness on that. I know Brian talks about that a lot, just with what we've learned on our farm too, that if we get that fertility built up, all of a sudden there isn't quite as much difference hybrid to hybrid or soybean variety to soybean variety. They can all perform pretty well.
That's exactly right. That's one of the things we've noticed, you know, trying to find that silver bullet to you know, reach some of the yield goals that we're striving for. And it all goes back basically to, you know, well-drained and good fertility. And that's your, you know, that's the biggest percentage of it right there, and timing on the input.
Now, I'm nervous here, Matt, because you just mentioned well-drained ground, and you mentioned Brian was right on the money about getting fertility. Brian's smiling really big, and I'm in jeopardy of losing the show here to Brian. So let's move on from that a little bit. So with high-yielding soybeans, you mentioned defense here, and I think about that too. I think soybeans is one. If we can eliminate all the stresses out there, each stress that we can take away, we've got a better chance at high yields. You mentioned you got a small amount of topsoil. Talk to us about this year. What were some of the things specific to 2020 in terms of this crop that you had to do on soybeans? Did you have to get into anything out of the ordinary to get this crop to succeed?
No, pretty much. We had a really wet spring. And 2020 for a farmer has been about like 2020 in general for the United States. Just seemed like almost a total train wreck. But, you know, we had pretty good luck this year as far as doing basically the same things we normally do. Now, we did try some extra stuff. Like, I know y'all were talking about sulfur earlier. You know, we feel like we've got to have a minimum of you know, 20 on sulfur. Well, we went in there and put a lot more than that out, and we didn't get the reaction that we hoped for based, you know, on our checks in the field. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is just a good base fertility based on your yield goals. Like I said, using y'all's app and figuring out, you know, what you removed the year before. I think that's a, you know, when you go past that, we're not seeing the results of the ROI back on it, you know, that we were hoping to see.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up too, Matt, because so often we'll be talking to somebody and say, wow, this person won a yield contest or just has had a really high-yielding farm in general, and you're certainly one of those guys that's had some tremendous yields, and people think, well, he must not be getting a good return on investment. And I think it's so good for people to hear that's still how you're managing your farm. You want a good you want high yields, but you also want to do it getting a great return on your investment.
Oh yeah, that's something that's a misconception with some of the high yield that some of the high yield growers go through is you know, well, they're spending this much money, no wonder they're making that kind of yields. But that's the main goal. You know, you may have a 100-acre field and have 5 acres over on the side that you're trying that on just to see if you can find things that react that are positive ROI. But the last thing a farmer wants to do, I think, or producer, is produce something under budget. We do that enough just with normal practices.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the kind of year 2020 has been. There's definitely going to be plenty of acres out there that it's not for spending too much, that the guys are going to have a tough time making money. All right, talk to us about soil pH, Matt. Is this a battle that you have to fight on your farm? If so, are you battling low pH, high pH, and what are you doing to get fertilizer to be available for your crop?
Well, you know, if anything, we would probably be considered low pH. We try to keep that level around the 6 to 6.5. Occasionally we'll have a field that's, you know, 7, but most of the time we'll get below 6, we apply lime. And then we started looking at the cow-mag ratios more closely and figuring out that, you know, it's not always that calcitic ag lime that we need, but there's you know, we got several loads of dolomitic lime on our farm now, you know, to kind of make some of those ratios get back in order. Also, you know, if we've got a field that's looking like it needs more calcium, we'll switch from broiler litter. You know, we use a lot of organic fertilizer, and broiler hen litter, you know, it's, you know, egg production litter's got a lot of calcium in it through the crushed of eggshells. So that's another little trick or area we can go to where we can change the type of litter that we're getting, you know, as our fertility on any of our crops and pick up a little more calcium in that area. But needing calcium was probably normally a bigger problem than having too much for us.
Yeah, I think that's a good tip, too, for growers as you're getting manure or compost and different waste products. Make sure that you're getting a good test on those so you know what's in there. I know for us, too, just the water treatment plant lime that we've used, it's been amazing how many other nutrients are in that lime and things that could really help us out if we put them in the right spots, just like everything else. How about foliar feeding, Matt? I know you mentioned you just don't have a ton of topsoil, and this year you certainly had a wet spring. Is foliar feed kind of part of the equation now, too, on a regular basis?
It is. You know, I don't feel like, you know, I've always been the type of person that's, you know, you get most of your fertility from your roots. And we use it more as a Band-Aid. You know, pulling tissue samples for the last several years, we kind of developed some trends when we know when a, like a soybean plant's going to need the most of the potash. And we'll go in there with a foliar treatment or some type of foliar K treatment at that point, you know, just to kind of keep the plant happy and healthy. But I would say 95% of our fertility needs we try to do, you know, through the root system, whether it's a liquid application wide drop or we use a lot of granular also. Now, we will split, as Mr. Trent had said earlier, you know, some of our soils leach so bad. We found that, like on our potash, granular potash treatments, we'll split those into two applications. It costs a little bit more money, but the ROI by getting some of that potash out later when the plant really needs it, you know, has been worth a lot to us instead of front loading. A lot of guys put it out right now, you know, and expect that soybean crop to be able to use it, you know, next June at its highest potash level needs. And we found that it's better to kind of delay that and just kind of spoon feed it.
Yeah, definitely a lot of lessons to learn over years of farming. Matt, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and safe fall to you and your crew.
Yes, sir, guys. Thank you.
Talking about fertilizing soybeans on today's program, if this is something you haven't been doing, there definitely is a return on investment there if you figure out the right things that you need to get into your crop and the right timings to do so. Hopefully you've been enjoying the show so far. We'll be right back with more after this.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expect it soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. Today we're talking about fertilizing soybeans, and I just wanted to share with you real quick, 70 bushel soybeans, what these remove. Oh, and by the way, you might say, well, my beans don't yield 70 bushels, whatever your beans yield. Just download the free Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. You can punch up whatever crop that you've got. And then whatever your yield is, so you can have your information for your farm. But don't forget the high-yielding spots versus the low-yielding spots. So in other words, if you have spots on your farm that are yielding 100, that means that those spots are pulling out crazy amounts of nutrients. Because here's just what 70 bushel beans need. And I'll give you first, so we're talking about potassium so much. It's, other than nitrogen, it's the nutrient that soybeans need the most of. 154 pounds for 70 bushel beans. So in other words, that's over 2 pounds per bushel. Think about that, over 2 pounds of K2O potassium per bushel. And in terms of grain removal, so in other words, if you leave all the stover in the field and you only take the grain off, 84 pounds of K2O potassium leaves the field when you harvest 70 bushel beans. That's a lot. Just to replace that, you'd need roughly 150 pounds of potash. Now, you can put out whatever source you want, but I'm just saying 84 pounds grain removal, that's a lot. You'd have to have just unbelievably high-yielding corn to have that much removal. Soybeans, a good yield for soybeans takes more K out of the soil in terms of grain removal anyway than a good yield of corn. Just keep that in mind. And it's way more than wheat. Anyway, a couple others that I'll mention to you. One is magnesium. And I realize if you're in the Midwestern United States or Southern Canada, you're going, well, I don't need much magnesium. I'm overloaded. Yep, you probably are. But if you have lighter soil, if you have any sandy spots, pay attention to this because 70 bushel beans need 35 pounds of magnesium. 70 bushel beans need 67 pounds of calcium. Oh, and by the way, 70 bushel beans need over 2 pounds of iron. So you got to make sure you have iron out in your soil. Manganese, 0.7 pounds. I mean, it just takes a lot of nutrients. So the big thing that we would tell you is, yes, I realize it's not always going to pay when you fertilize your soybeans. But one way or the other, you got to think about, hey, if I don't at least put the fertilizer out I'm removing, I'm falling behind. And that's going to affect me somewhere down the road. Can I survive if, let's say I had high fertility, can I survive for a year or two without any fertilizer, like P and K anyway? You probably can, but it's not going to take very long. With the kind of yields that we pull off today, it's not going to take long, and all of a sudden you go, oh, wow, I was in good shape, and now all of a sudden I'm not in good shape at all. So I can't tell you how many times we've run into that in our farm. Oh, we're so high for this. Let's cut back a little bit. We do, and like 2 years later, I'm going, what? We cut back too much, and now we're actually really hurting our yield. So you got to pay attention to this stuff all the time, and even more so as yields go up. And I just want you to think about this. When your grandpa was farming, what kind of soybean yield was he getting? And what kind of corn yield was he getting? When your dad was farming, what kind of corn yield and what kind of soybean yield? Now, for you, think about your yields today. Now think about your kids. Now think about your grandkids. And you may be saying, well, I don't need to worry about that. They're going to have to figure it out. Well, yes, but who's going to teach them? Because I want you to think about this. How often on the farm do you say, well, Dad always did it this way, so this is kind of the way we do it, right? So in other words, if you aren't doing it how you should, then your kid someday, or kids, they're going to say, well, this is kind of how Dad always did it, so this is what we got to do. And I realized that, you know, back in a generation or two ago, it was much more important to learn how to fix equipment. It was more important to maybe even learn how to take care of livestock or, I mean, a number of different jobs around the farm. What I'm trying to tell you is this. It's very possible that your kids and your grandkids are going to spend tens of millions of dollars on fertilizer in their lifetimes. Okay, seriously, think about it. When they do, are they going to spend those dollars right? Because if they don't spend those dollars right, or they don't spend enough dollars, then they're going to have disaster. And the last thing you want is for your kids and your grandkids to be unsuccessful at whatever they do. So that starts with you. And you've got to learn it, you've got to do it, you've got to teach it, and then eventually, things are great in agriculture. Agriculture is a generational industry. It's so different than most other industries out there. Yes, I realize there are some small businesses and even large businesses that pass down from one generation to the next. But with farming, it's a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the acres in the United States were farmed by whoever's farming it today. It was farmed by their parents and in some cases even grandparents. Okay, so just think about that moving forward. And all I'm saying here is with fertilizing soybeans, right now, soybeans are under-fertilized. We're pulling off more fertilizer, or we're pulling out more fertilizer from the soil than what we're putting back as the United States, and I believe it's the same case up in Canada. So we got to change that. Otherwise, you know where this thing is going. We're not heading the right direction. And right now, you've seen commodity prices, well, other than today, commodity prices have really gone up in the last month and a half. That's awesome. And at the same time, we've got cheap fertilizer. Potassium's cheap, phosphorus is cheap, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I'd love to have it half the price it is today. But I'm just saying, compared to the last few years, it's less expensive. So it is, and it does give you an opportunity to build up your soils a little bit. I know that's what we're planning on for some of our fields that are low testing, and we would encourage you at least be taking a look at it, okay? You can help your soybeans too. If let's say you're in 30-inch rows, you can band some fertilizer, especially deep band. Just be careful about how close you're getting it to the seed because soybeans are real sensitive to salt. But never forget that soybeans have roughly 1/5 the root mass of corn. 1/5! So quite often I'll talk to farmers that say, oh, soybeans are a good scavenger crop. I'm like, what? Soybeans have 1/5 the root mass of corn. Corn's a way better scavenger crop than soybeans. So, I mean, don't fall into that trap of thinking, well, you know, soybeans will just take whatever's left over. Well, they'd love to. But the problem is, number one, we usually don't have a lot of leftover fertilizer. And number two, their root systems are simply not big enough to extract the fertilizer that they need from the soil in many cases. You get your fertilizer, your fertility up overall in the soil, and not just up, but balanced. You got to be balanced. Get that pH right. Make sure you have a good balance of phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, micronutrients. You do those things, and things are going to be great for you with soybeans moving forward. All right, let's jump back into the Ag PhD mailbag.
All right, Brian, got this from Chris, and he said, would it be beneficial to spray something like Gramoxone or Paraquat after sweet corn harvest to kill water hemp to try to stop seeds before they reach viability?
Well, yeah. I mean, you want to kill them somehow, some way. So I'll give you a couple options. You can use tillage. You could even mow them down. You could certainly spray a herbicide that's going to work quickly, and I assume that's why you mentioned Gramoxone or Paraquat. Now, keep in mind, Gramoxone, the active ingredient, is Paraquat, is very dangerous. It's just as dangerous as gasoline, so you got to be super careful around it. Instead, you could use something like Liberty that will work very similarly to Gramoxone. It may be, well, I'm sure your water hemp is resistant to Roundup. A lot of people used to use Roundup. Otherwise, you could certainly use 2,4-D, dicamba. I mean, there are a lot of different products that can be used to kill that water hemp. But yeah, don't forget about other things like even just mowing it off or tilling it under. All depends on your situation. But yeah, we absolutely want to stop that water hemp from going to seed. Now, there could be seed on there already when you get out there. And if you see that, you might be able to kill it now and you'll stop most of those seeds from being viable in the future, but maybe not all of them. So honestly, Once they start to form seed heads, you're starting to get in trouble.
All right, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got some feedback from Chris. He said, the biology of boron is so ignored. So nice to see you guys talking about boron. We were talking about it just the other day here. So nice to see a video, too, that you had on this overlooked element. Move over carbon. Boron is an element that matters. And he said, maybe if they called it excite-on, that people would be more interested in it than it being called
boron. Well, part of the problem is people hear so often, oh, it can be toxic, it can be toxic. Look, everything can be toxic. You got to know how to use it, put it on the right way, and put it on at the right rate, and then it's great.
We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. We'll take your calls at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. Got this one from Bruce in Wisconsin, and he's got a tissue test at the top of the sheet and a soil analysis at the bottom. I really like that. I like that you can see both, so appreciate that, Bruce. He said, first of all, I want to give you guys a big thank you for recommending Eptam ahead of my alfalfa. I seeded alfalfa in July. Now it's almost October, and I have zero weeds in my stand. That's fantastic. This has been a field where we've had thistle and milkweed problems and other things, and we've got nothing out there. That's awesome. But my request for you today is I've got a neighbor. He's just got a very small patch, like an acre and a half of Roundup Ready alfalfa. And what he would like to know is he needs to get his calcium level up. I noticed the pH is down at like 6.
Yes, it is.
He's going to have a tough time getting alfalfa to yield in that environment.
Yeah.
So he needs to get calcium up. He said, what would be the best idea for putting stuff out there and how much would he need to put on?
Okay, just broadcast lime. I don't know exactly what it would be. I don't have the formulas right in front of me. The buffer pH is 6.7. That tells you it's not going to take a whole lot. And I don't see a cation exchange capacity number in here, but that tells me that it's not heavy soil, probably. It's most likely a medium textured soil when I see a buffer pH of 6.7 and the pH is 6. So anyway, I'd put lime out there, and yeah, I don't know exactly. Just ask the lab. They should easily be able to tell you.
Okay.
By the way,
I was going to talk about P and K a little bit on this sample.
Yeah, okay,
too.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just noticed that he's got a really high level of phosphorus out there, which is fantastic going into an alfalfa crop. Alfalfa is going to use of phosphorus and potassium.
That's correct. 192 parts per million on the phosphorus. So when they say excessively high, that is absolutely not excessively high. When you run your numbers for the next 4 years or however long you're going to leave that stand in, you're going to use all that. So that's not excessively high. They're dead wrong on that. It's a horrible recommendation or a horrible interpretation to call that excessively high. That's awful. On the potassium, for them to say 120 parts per million is optimum, they're also absolutely dead wrong. Couldn't be more wrong. 120 parts per million, are you kidding me? With what alfalfa takes out of the ground, you need more like 500 or 800. So no, you need to really, I mean, if I was working, let's say that it was new ground that I was going to seed to alfalfa this fall, I would load that up with K. The phosphorus is already there, so that's the good news. But I'd load it up with K and get it down in the ground where the roots can use it. So yes, you can go out and broadcast it, but it's going to go so slowly into the ground. It's just not going to be where you want it to be. And also think about, even if it does go in the ground, the deepest it's going to get is an inch probably if it's medium textured soil. And where's the moisture at? Well, potassium goes in with moisture. And so unless you're getting constant rain, like in our area here, we've had no rain for 2.5 months. Can you have no rain for 2.5 months? You know what? We're still pulling off some good crops where we had subsoil moisture and fertility down with the moisture. When your fertility is in the top inch, it's okay, but it's not great. So that's the next thing. And then boron, you definitely need some boron, and boron is leachable. So you can add a little bit of that as you go each year, but alfalfa uses a lot of boron. Just use a little bit of boron each year, no big deal, and a little bit of manganese each year. That would be fine too, as well as sulfur. So, but when I look at your boron, your manganese, and sulfur, all those are really, really low.
All right, thanks, Bruce. Really appreciate you sending that in. This comes from Danny in South Africa, and he said, I've got a question for you on variable rate fertility. I've been doing it since 2012. We've had really good success with it. Unfortunately, research on this subject is pretty limited in our geography. I'm using mainly yield data followed by soil classification to create the needed data sets for seeding and fertilizer, etc. Now, my question is this. Is there a correct or wrong way of interpreting data to make decisions on variable rate populations, variable rate fertility? What's the route to go? Example would be creating prescriptions for corn population. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, to say flat out wrong, nobody can tell you that because the problem is we don't know what the weather's going to bring. That's the whole thing. So, I mean, So let's put it this way. It makes sense. We've got some ground, for example, that we have sand, we have some medium texture, and then a lot of it is heavy. That's all in the same field. Okay, so it would make sense, of course, on the sand, non-irrigated. We don't have lots of rainfall here. So on the sand, we're going to cut back our fertility. We're going to cut back our population. That makes sense. Okay, but let's say that we have a record rainfall year, like, for example, last year, 2019. In the sand, it hurt us because we didn't put out enough fertilizer and we didn't put out a high enough population. So when we talk about, well, you know, what's right and wrong, there isn't necessarily a right and wrong because we don't know the weather. On average, we have to assume that the heavy ground could use more fertilizer because it's going to pull off more yield. and we're planting a higher population. But again, like last year, we had fantastic drainage for a normal year. But last year, when we had double normal rainfall, the heavy ground was waterlogged. And so we put on too much fertilizer and had too much population in the heavy ground, even though it would be what we would consider normal for heavy ground. So you see where I'm going with all this. So yeah, usually, yes, we are looking at soil type. Yes, we are looking at yield. But then you're just playing the odds. Are you going to have rain? Are you not going to have rain? Are you going to have heat? Are you not going to have heat? So anyway, I don't know if I need to go a whole lot more on that side of things. I will say this, though. There are certain numbers that we're always looking for. Like we were just talking about phosphorus and potassium on perennial crops like alfalfa. But even just get the base saturation potassium level up. Get your nutrients in ratio. Okay, so we've got to look at ratios, and that's where the variable rate fertilizer thing really comes in, because in some areas the ratio is right. Other areas the ratio is way off, and if I put fertilizer in those spots, it's going to give me a lot greater return than in the other spots. So that's what we're looking at. We're actually using soil tests more than anything for all the variable rate fertility that we're after.
All right, thanks for the questions. Really appreciate that. This comes from Dylan in Northern Virginia. He said, we're producing hay, and we're taking a lot of nutrients out of the soil with that hay, of course. We don't have a real ready source of litter or manure to put back out there to replace organic material that we're taking away or micronutrients. Wondering what you would recommend for us, either organically or with commercial fertilizer, and when you would like to see that out there so we could get the micronutrients that our hay is going to need and get the yield that we've been trying to get.
Okay, first of all, don't get too worried about pulling off that organic material. That is not organic matter. That is organic material. When you have a perennial crop out there, you've got the extensive root system growing below ground. I mean, it's holding the soil in place. Everything's fine. So that part I'm not worried about. And as long as you keep fertilizing the crop well, the crop's going to continue to produce. Everything's going to be okay. So that part doesn't concern me. In terms of getting nutrients out for a hay crop, there are micronutrients that are leachable. We were just talking about boron is a good example of that. Sulfur is a secondary nutrient that will move down in soil. Even, you know, calcium and magnesium will move down in soil. Manganese will move down. But you know what doesn't? Zinc. Zinc is pretty immobile, just like phosphorus. Copper doesn't move down very well in soil. So here's my point. When we've got non-mobile nutrients, that's where you got to look at before I put a hay crop out there. If I have the chance to work things in or deep apply fertilizer, I'm going to do it. And on those perennial crops, I'm going to put out multi-years. So think about it this way. When phosphorus and zinc and copper don't move hardly at all in soil, and let's say your soil is a little bit on the low side, you could put out 5-10 years worth of fertility for the perennial crop, however long that perennial crop's going to be in the soil. And that fertilizer is not going anywhere. So it's going to stay there until the plant roots bring it up. But when you get that down in the ground, now you've protected it. If you lay it on the soil surface, it's going to take years for it to get into the ground. And in the meantime, if you have any erosion at all, when you lose the dirt, you lose the fertility. That's bad news. So yeah, on the micros and all the things that are leachable that'll move down through the soil, you can apply a little bit every year, no big deal. Okay, I mentioned boron, sulfur, you know, things like that. But for those non-mobile nutrients, get them down there in big quantities before you ever seed a hay crop. You'll be very thankful you did.
Well, thanks for the questions, Dylan. We really appreciate that. Good luck with your hay. Thanks to everybody for listening today. Really appreciate having you on with us on the show. And we also appreciate your feedback. Radio@agphd.com is our mailbox. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.